It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning and welcome to Fed Talk. I'm Deborah Roth. I will be co-hosting today's show. And with us today in the studio is a very rare event. If you're listening because you saw it out there on the social media that we pushed it out there on, it is an incredible rarity to be able to have folks like these come talk to us for an hour at Fed Talk. We have the Counterintelligence Division of the FBI's Assistant Director with us today, Randall Coleman. Good morning. Assistant Director Coleman.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, no, thank you for being on the show. Joining him is his Chief of Staff for the Counterintelligence Division. It's Agent John Lenkhart.
Good morning, John. Great to be here.
Thank you. And one of the section chiefs, one of the sections in the Counterintelligence Division at the FBI is the Counterespionage Division. I can't even believe I get to say that on air. And we have with us the section chief, Agent Sandy. I'm going to call you Sandy Cable. Good morning, Agent Cable.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
Thank you for joining all of us. Joining me to co-host the show is my colleague and law partner, Julie Perkins. Good morning, Julie.
Good morning.
And the two of us are just, anytime we can, like, spend any time talking to anyone who does this kind of work, which fascinates the both of us, it's fun. But you're not here today for fun. You're here today because if you've been on their website, you will know this is very serious business. And I want to start with Assistant Director Coleman and have him tell our listeners I know this because I practice law in this town. What is counterintelligence, and what does the division and the FBI, what is it they do in the world of counterintelligence?
Well, again, Deborah, thank you very much for having us.
Sure.
This, as you mentioned, is not something historically that we engaged in. We've turned the corner in the FBI, certainly from the counterintelligence standpoint, to make sure that we're promoting our mission, that we are using the American public to help us do our job. And we'll talk a little bit more about that and how serious the threat is. Why we're here today, obviously, is to get that message out.
Mm-hmm.
I've brought with me two very talented people, a careerist in the FBI, that have dedicated their life to public service in the FBI and protecting the country. The mission of the Counterintelligence Division.
What is counterintelligence?
Yeah, so intelligence work is offensive in nature, right? It's to go out and collect information and intelligence in order for our line of work to help a particular government, right? Our job in the FBI is counterintelligence, right? Is to stop hostile foreign intelligence services from collecting that information and using it to harm the United States. In fact, our mission statement is very clear in the fact that it says identify, neutralize, and defeat hostile foreign intelligence services that are operating against the United States. So first and foremost, that's really the framework of our mission. The Counterintelligence Division, a very robust group of professionals at headquarters here in Washington, D.C., but I'd like to point out...
And I imagine they're very interesting.
They are.
Right?
Very talented group of people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in awe many times when you look at our workforce and the talent and the skill set that we have from a professional support and analytical, from the analyst that we have, and then certainly from the agent careerists that we have in the organization. So it's unbelievable. But we have a very robust counterintelligence program at FBI headquarters,
mm-hmm.
but we also have a counterintelligence program in each of our 56 field offices across the country. that are working this every day and are dedicated to that mission every day. Something that I wanted to point out is that we work very closely with the rest of the U.S. intelligence community. Mm-hmm. And so we are intertwined. It's not just FBI-centric at FBI headquarters or out in the field offices. We have representatives from all of our USIC partners. It's funny, I call it the hostage exchange, but we exchange detailees, right? And so I have people from the CIA and people from NSA that work very closely shoulder to shoulder with FBI employees every day and to coordinate and make sure that we're working together in concert against that threat.
That's all post 9/11.
Absolutely.
What came out of the 9/11 commission. People who are listening should go on the website, and which Julie and I did before, obviously, we did the show to learn about the work. I mean, and I was saying to you folks before the show, like, I mean, I'm inside the Beltway. We know what's going on. You know, we hear things. But then you go on the website and you start reading these press releases about these, you know, individual cases that just don't make the news. And, you know, it's like, oh, of course the Russians are still engaged in Cold War espionage. Things we're going to talk about later on in the show, but it was it's things that we should expect are happening, but we don't hear about it because the news is very focused on the terrorist threat. And so, Assistant Director Coleman, how's that differ? How does what you do in Counterintelligence Division, how's that differ from what most people today think of as the job of the FBI, which is, they're looking for the terrorist threat inside?
Yeah, I think one of the, it's part of this change that we've seen over time, right? And the FBI was built to come in after the fact. A crime is committed, the FBI investigates, and we find those responsible, and then we assist in the prosecution. And we are the premier law enforcement agency at doing that. 9/11 changed that game for the FBI. And what really changed was is we had to be more predictive and more proactive in what we do, because we can't allow those things to happen. And that carries on into the counterintelligence world. I reject the argument that counterintelligence is defensive in nature. We have to be as proactive and predictive as we can. And the way that we do that is we have, over the last 3 years, really professionalized this, is we've brought on an extremely talented cadre of intelligence analysts to be able to look over the horizon and look at what the threat is that's coming at us and be able to put resources and plans together to stop the bad action from happening before it happens.
Right.
It's no longer acceptable to have something bad happen and then us come in after the fact. It becomes a catastrophic event, certainly in the counterintelligence world. And so Section Chief Cable here, his function is specific to counterespionage, mm-hmm. so spying, mm-hmm. where you have foreign intelligence services that are trying to penetrate the government or steal
our spying secrets inside the U.S.
That's right. And so his job and what he really focuses on is putting the resources and the effort of the FBI along with our partners in a position to prevent it from happening before it happens and control that space from an offensive perspective. And that's not easy. That's not an easy task. But I think if you look at over the last 4 years of the FBI, we have arrested and prosecuted more people for espionage or espionage-related crimes than we have in our history.
That is an amazing statistic. And how do you account for that?
Well, there's really a few factors, right? Number one is the world is much more unstable than it's ever been.
It just feels that way.
It is.
Yeah. And I thought it was just because I was like getting old and middle aged. It does. It feels like it's getting very unstable.
Mm-hmm. And so as a result of that, hostile foreign intelligence services are more desperate to steal and acquire technology, whether it relates to our warfighter or our economy. And so that brings an entirely more aggressive adversary to the table. The next part, and we'll talk more about this later, is our outreach and exactly why we're here today is to communicate and bring an awareness to the public. So people are thinking about this. And so when they see something, they'll pick up the phone and call, and we can get involved much early on. And our outreach effort has been tremendous, and I think that that really contributes to a lot of what I just described mm-hmm. in our arrests and our prosecutions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's like I said, it's incredibly interesting to be able to have the work of this part of our government here today to talk about it. We are going to get into a whole bunch of details about the mission and what they're doing and where they're doing and their successes and some of the things they're worried about that they're actually looking for your help on. But we do need to take our first commercial break. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Make long-term care insurance part of your retirement plan. Long-term care is expensive, and it's not covered by traditional types of insurance plans. With benefits designed specifically for the federal family, the Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program offers a smart way to help protect savings and assets and remain independent should you need long-term care services someday. Start planning for the future. Take the next step and visit LTCFEDS.com today. That's LTCFEDS.com.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Deborah Roth. I'm hosting today's show. With us today in the studio is the Assistant Director for Counterintelligence at the FBI, Randall Coleman, his section chief, who is the chief of the counterespionage section at FBI, Sandy Cable, and the chief of staff to the division, John Lenkart, who actually is the one who brought us the show. We should thank you on air. Thank you, John. Assistant Director Coleman, before we start digging down into the work, you know, specifically what's the work of the division and where, you know, where are the efforts, tell us generally what the threats are. What are the threats that the division is focused on for mission purposes?
Yeah, I think it's no secret. Obviously, our number one threat that posed against the United States emanates out of China. When you look at our historic cases, the intelligence that we have, China poses the greatest threat to the United States.
But what kind of threat?
Well,
it
comes in different fashions, mm-hmm. right? You have a symmetric threat. We call it symmetric and asymmetric, and I'll define those. The symmetric threat is where you have trained intelligence officers, right? They're career intelligence officers that have gone through many, many years of training, and that's their you know, function in life is to acquire intelligence. You have the asymmetric threat where you have...
And they're state actors, right?
They are.
They're
yeah,
state
absolutely.
Actors.
State-sponsored
right.
Intelligence officers. Then you have the asymmetric threat, which is not as clearly defined. And it can be anyone from businessmen or, you know, delegations that come through, students. We've actually had cases where they've been tasked... Right, because of their particular access or where they're located in a particular a job function, where they've been tasked by the government to acquire certain technology and bring that back with them or forward that back over, and so that's that asymmetric threat, and you know clearly China poses
harder
the
to follow probably
absolutely
right?
It's very difficult, right. Very difficult to follow, as far as the counterintelligence division and the structure and
yeah.
how we're built. Probably what I'd like to highlight is my counterespionage section, which is obviously a priority for the FBI, which is what Section Chief Cable runs. I also have a counterproliferation center. Proliferation has skyrocketed, and I think it goes right to the heart of what I described, you know, a very unstable globe and an aggressive adversaries, but sanctions. That we have throughout the world, and so there is an effort to gain access to equipment. It doesn't have to be weapon systems, but whether it be classified or unclassified type technology, in order to exfiltrate that out of the United States and into these particular countries that are sanctioned. And so there are networks.
But it's like
of people.
Military. When I think of proliferation, I think of in the world of military type technology mm-hmm. for an adversary of the United States to either build a defense
yeah.
or build an offense.
So that's definitely a priority, right?
Yeah.
But there are many other, you know, there's many countries, or I say many, there are countries that you just don't do business with from the United States perspective. And so there are efforts amongst groups of people that want to do it just for financial gain, that they want to ship certain items.
Because they're hard to get, so they're more expensive. That's
right.
A good way to make money.
That's right. And so we've had cases in the middle part of America I'll describe a mom-and-pop run operations where significant money has exchanged hands and items have been shipped to first, second, and third countries in order to get into its the destination country. And so we've been successful in many cases to take those down.
Yeah, no, it's like I said, reading some of the press releases, I mean, I know you guys are out there doing these things, but it's like, oh my God, it's really happening, you know, really is happening. It's very aggressive. Agent Cable, can you tell us about the work of the counter-espionage section? It sounds so, you know, it's spooky, right?
Right. So it
and
can
how are you
be
different?
Spooky.
I think it'd be really interesting to hear how you're different from Central Intelligence Agency.
Well, that's a great question.
Okay.
There's often a misconception or just a misunderstanding as to what the CIA does and what the FBI does and the different actions that we take upon ourselves. So the CIA generally is in the business of foreign intelligence collection. So there is information in foreign governments that they seek to acquire, bring back to the United States so that we can provide to the policymakers to make a more informed judgment on the decisions that the president and his staff is going to make on a given issue. The FBI, for the counterintelligence perspective, is that we are after the foreign intelligence collectors inside the United States who would collect our information for the benefit of those foreign governments. And in this regard, as the assistant director has just mentioned, there is a series of bad actors here in the United States who generally can't walk into U.S. departments, bureaus, agencies and demand or otherwise solicit
information.
You can't
walk in. You can't even walk into the radio station anymore, we found out today.
Right, with the badges we're wearing.
Right. You can't walk in here today. Now you have to go through some sort of security. You clearly cannot walk into any federal building.
Correct. And so in that regard, they're looking for accesses and persons with access that they can use as their proxies for the acquisition of that material, that information, those papers, et cetera. And so in that regard, it's our responsibility to get to those people to harden the defense so that they are at least aware of the foreign intelligence threat that they face. So these are U.S. persons, right, American citizens, in placement and access that we want to harden, that we don't want talking to these foreign intelligence actors. But in the counter-espionage section, so as the assistant director had mentioned, I have a series of and a great cadre of very professional agents who are very aggressive in this regard, going out and hardening the target. Backing them up are the intelligence analysts who go out and they find where the holes are. We call them gaps. And we look to fill them, all right? And just
what's that mean?
Just make it harder for other people to
like
attack
what us. Hole? What kind of hole are you looking for? Can you give us an example?
Sure. The for example, a foreign intelligence service may want to know what our plans and policies are vis-a-vis that particular country or a particular strait or whatever it's going to be. So we know who has those plans. We know who has those ideas, those policies
inside
those
our government,
within the government,
right.
And in that regard, we can get to those people and give them defensive briefs. We can talk to them saying, hey, there is a likelihood in the next couple of weeks that you will be approached by a given bad actor. You might want not want to talk to that person.
I saw in one of the press releases, it was a university.
Indeed.
They were trying to get college students to get information from.
Right.
Does that happen often?
It does, and it's happening more and more. It was interesting. 3 or 4 years ago, we had an investigation within the counter-espionage section in which the Chinese intelligence services had spotted, assessed, and otherwise recruited a U.S. student who was abroad.
Who was abroad, not in the United States?
Not in the United States. Okay. He was overseas. And in that regard, he had taken tasking by them and attempted to join a major metropolitan police department for the purposes of padding his resume so he could get into the United States Intelligence Service. Mm-hmm. All right. And in that regard, the community got wind of this person's action, all right, and his intention to get into the community for the purposes of acting on behalf of the Chinese Intelligence Service. We stopped that. All right.
How do you even learn about that? That
was my question. I was thinking, right.
Those are great questions.
Like these feel like needles in a haystack.
Uh-huh. So there's multiple ways of us finding out about information. A lot of them are either technical or human derived, right? People just tell us stuff. More importantly, though, is, and this is something that we hopefully can get into, is our strategic partnership that we have with agencies, businesses, bureaus, and academia, in which we're leveraging our relationships to be able to have them have a sense of confidence and comfort level to be able to say, hey, this is an action or an activity that bothers us. And in that regard, perhaps we should report it to the government. Who should we report it to? Would it be the agency? Would it be Homeland Security? Would it be all these other things? It's the FBI. And in that regard, we have very specific actors within our field offices who are strategic outreach coordinators, all right, strategic partnership coordinators, and they go out and develop these relationships so that when an action or something that causes concern with somebody can report it to the FBI, and then that'll get it to the various counterintelligence or counterespionage squads around the country.
So, you know, I've operated from an assumption, but I think it might be helpful to our listeners. It's a federal crime, right?
It is.
To actively try to acquire, steal, whatever the word is. I'm sure there's a word in the statute or the series of statutes, certain kinds of information, either from the government.
It's national security information.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. So information from the government, but also information because they passed the Economic Espionage Act.
Right.
So information from a corporation they hold. And so that's how you get your jurisdiction, is that it's become a federal crime to try to acquire or sell, give away that information.
Correct.
And so can I back up to hardening the target inside federal agencies?
Certainly.
Right. So because I find that very interesting. Like, I didn't know that was going on. So would you give briefings inside particular agencies where you think you have an information that there's a potential threat?
Right. So there's actually multiple things that we do. So, for example, one of our largest relationship and most fruitful relationship is with the Central Intelligence Agency, specifically the Counterintelligence Center and the Counterespionage Group over at CIA. That person is headed by an FBI, the CEG, the Counterespionage Group at CIA, is headed by an FBI agent. And in that regard, we have daily interaction and daily calls so that the things that are happening within CIA and the things that are happening...
Well, the information they're learning, right?
Yes. Well, more importantly, it's the action that they have. They want to be able to have an avenue to report anomalies to the FBI. But at the same time, we're plugged in with them for the purposes of sensitizing other agencies and other employees as to what the threat is, so that we can kind of manage that threat, right? And so,
in concert with Central Intelligence Agency.
Indeed, right? And so we have these relationships with the Defense Department. We have them with Homeland Security. We have them with the Department of Energy.
Right.
We have them throughout the U.S. government. And it's a very beneficial partnership, simply because we're talking to one another. It didn't used to happen. You know, you mentioned before September 11th, 2001, there was that wall, right? That doesn't exist any longer. As a matter of fact, as the assistant director had mentioned, we have detailees that are leaving the Bureau to go and populate these other agencies for the purposes of providing us information. The same is true for these other organizations. I house several within the counterespionage section for the purposes of returning information for statuses and otherwise sharing information that would be beneficial to these other departments, agencies, and bureaus.
So I want to clear up for our listeners. I want to make sure this is very clear. Your agents are not engaged in espionage activity.
No, they are not.
They're engaged in preventing it.
Correct.
Awareness. Mm-hmm. And to the extent there's some sort of indicia that maybe an act of espionage has occurred or might occur, they're involved in the law enforcement activity.
Correct. In the investigation that comes after the allegation, all right, we follow it up with an investigation, and then in concert with the United States Attorney's Office, the prosecution of that individual. Mm-hmm.
People must feel that they, go into work every day, they have one of these mission, a mission comes from God, people say everywhere in the government today, they're involved in national security and the war on terror, but that really, that is as close as you get to, protecting the national security of the United States.
That's right. This is the real deal.
Yeah, this is the real deal. This is why when they told me counterintelligence division for the FBI was coming on my radio show, I rolled my eyes and I said, really, you're kidding me. I'm really curious about inside the agencies, and I have a question for you, which I'm going to tease our listeners, because I'm sort of curious what gets because you'll see the prosecutions. What gets a federal employee, an agency, someone with access to classified information, what gets them to try to sell it? What turns them to sell it? Because I think that those signs would be very helpful to our listeners. What are you looking for to see, you know, because we certainly don't want people just randomly turning in their colleagues. But I just cannot imagine knowing the consequences and the risk and why feeding the enemy. I personally cannot imagine doing it. So it's like very interesting to me what gets a U.S. Employee to do that. And I want to ask you that, Agent Cable, when we come back from our commercial break. But we do have to take our mid-show break. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Are you a federal or U.S. Postal Service employee or annuitant, or an active or retired member of the uniformed services? If so, you're eligible to apply for coverage under the Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program. The program offers a smart way to help protect savings and assets and remain independent should you need long-term care services someday. Make long-term care insurance part of your retirement plan. Find out how at LTCFEDS.com. That's LTCFEDS.com.
If you're a federal manager, you deal with a lot of information. Here's a tip on breaking through the noise. Join the Federal Managers Association to have a voice on Capitol Hill. And to get filtered news and information specific to managing your workforce, join the 50,000 other federal managers who already subscribe and read the free weekly e-report, FedManager.com. I'm Todd Wells, Executive Director of the Federal Managers Association, and I approve this message.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Deborah Roth. I'm hosting today's show. With us today in the studio is the Counterintelligence Division from the Federal Bureau of Investigation, headed by their Assistant Director, Randall Coleman. Before the break, though, I was speaking with the counter-espionage section chief. I love saying that. You know, I can't stop saying it. I love saying it. Agent Cable, and I was asking you to think about how you would talk to our listeners, many of whom are federal employees, many who obviously work, you know, in the defense industry, how you would talk to them when you say harden the top, the targets. You know, can you give, you know, here's a group to who's listening. Can you sort of like boil it down for a group of them, you know, in mass? What does that mean to harden the target, and what are they looking for?
Okay, so to begin with, there is a vast majority, if not all, of our federal employees who come to work every day with no intention whatsoever of
almost everyone
giving up the country. It's just not part of their nature. I mean, that's part of being an American and being in federal government. It's a privilege. It's fun to be here. We're working on things that matter, et cetera. There are occasion, however, when individuals, for whatever reason, kind of they just come off the wheels come off the bus. All right, and they come available in like four different categories.
Okay.
Sometimes it's patriotism to a foreign country. All right, so they may be an immigrant and decide, hey, you know, maybe Mother Russia or whomever, I'm more allegiant, have more allegiance to them. There's also a monetary incentive. All right. So somebody may have paid them for the access that they have, and then they're willing to sell out the country in that regard and provide information overseas. Sometimes they feel that they've been wronged. Mm-hmm. All right. They failed to get a promotion.
Mm-hmm. They've been disincentivized.
Exactly. They've been incentivized otherwise to exact revenge.
They think the government has acted against them.
Indeed.
Right.
And sometimes you get the opportunist, and that's the one that's the most nebulous, where for whatever reason, there may be some information that this person either comes in contact with or otherwise possesses, and they think, hey, this is of value to somebody else, and I'm going to sell it or otherwise transmit it to a foreign government. So that's the threat, right? How do you get in front of it to harden it? Well, within the last several years, we've developed the Strategic Partnership Coordination and Outreach Group. I call it my marketing and sales force within the counter-espionage
section. That's so funny. Marketing and sales at FBI.
Indeed. And we get out, and so I have 80 of these people in 56 field offices around the country. And they specifically go out and develop relationships with these businesses and academia and defense contractors and all the normal places where we would normally have classified information. You talk about classified information in academia, there's a tremendous amount of research and development that's happening at the university level that isn't necessarily classified at its inception, but ultimately gets into the mechanism for developing a warhead or a missile or an airplane or a ship or a radar and those things. And to the assistant director's point, that's what would be proliferated to an embargoed country. How do you get to those people to harden that target? Well, you got to get in front of them. First, you have to have a message, all right? And that is, we care. Second is, you've got to find the right people, right? And so when you start talking about the greater insider threat, you've got to be able to find that person and then say, hey, listen, by virtue of your placement and access and the agreements that you have with the government or your business or the academia or the university or company that you're employed by, you have access to trade secrets or intellectual property that is of value to that particular company. If you then choose to disclose that to a foreign government, right, that is economic espionage. If you choose to provide that to a competitor, that is a theft of trade secrets. And so it's these people, these strategic partnership coordinators, the SPCs we call them, that get out and talk to the average person about what that looks like, what does this threat look like, who's targeting them, what methodology they're using to target them. And so that when
and your agents are going out and doing sort of like economic espionage 101?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Who knew?
Yeah.
Because you don't think of FBI agents traditionally as educating you about the law. You know, no offense, guys, but it's all about, you know, after it's occurred, it's the gotcha. Mm-hmm. We're all about gotcha. Gonna get the bad guy, right? So that to me is extremely interesting. that's a real flip of the traditional skill set and demeanor and attitude of your agents.
Yeah, I think it goes right to the heart of what I said earlier about this sea change of being more proactive and predictive, right? Because we have to do that. We have to be able to go out and engage people on the front end before something bad happens in order to be into that position. And so that's why it's so critical.
What's the reaction you get?
You know, I think it's certainly something in the beginning when we started it was different. People, you know, as you mentioned, when the FBI shows up,
it's usually not good.
Hey, that's not good, right? But we've been able to really get this message out, and we have very strong alliances with the industry of the private sector, with academia, and we've got some really strong supporters out there. And so I think it's really starting to bear fruit in our investment in that over the
years. Right, and that's called the Assistant Director Coleman. Tell me again, it's the Strategic
Partnership. Yeah, Strategic Partnership Program.
Program. Yep. And is that just aimed at economic espionage?
No, it covers the gamut, right? And so it's education about the hostile foreign intelligence threat and what does that look like, right? Mm-hmm. And it encompasses all of these different threat areas that we're talking about and that we're faced with. And so it crosses many different lines of the threat and for a company or for a college and university. So it's the entire gamut of what we do.
Mm-hmm. So it's not just economic, it's also in the realm of, you know, government classified information.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And your agents are going out. And when you say partnership, is it more than just an educational?
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I'll let Sandy expand on it, but we actually have quarterly meetings where we bring people together, or we host regional meetings where we're actually there. It's a routine and regular event that we're bringing. And it's participatory, right? So it's not just about the FBI talking. It's about bringing all of the different industry and academia together so we can actually have a dialogue. Mm-hmm. And
learning from them, too, what's going
on. Exactly right. That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm. So tell me again how long this program's been up and running.
Well, I would say probably 13 years.
Really?
It used to be, it's had some different names, but for where we are right now, it's called the Strategic Partnership Program.
Mm-hmm. And corporate America today? Generally speaking, it's, you know, when the FBI shows up, everybody's like wants to get their lawyer, right? And nobody really wants to talk. But today, I imagine you've made some strides.
Yeah.
When I looked at all on the website about the work you do protecting the American economy, which is driven by private corporations. I just thought that was an amazing sea change in the traditional work of the FBI. And, not knowing that any of that was happening, corporate America today must feel pretty good about you guys.
I think so. I think we do. And I think we've been able to demonstrate that the threat is so immense, right, that it's so big that we can't go at it alone. Not just the U.S. government cannot go at it alone. And we need everybody to contribute in order to protect the country.
Mm-hmm. So, Agent Cable, you're going to tell us more about the nature of these partnerships.
Sure. So, for example, we have the National Security Business Alliance Council. So this is a partnership that we have with chief security officers with 30 different companies in the defense industrial base that also includes telecommunication and information technology, et cetera. So this is a fairly robust group of people, right? And they provide us insight into what's happening in corporate America. Mm-hmm. And kind of gives us the lay of the land as to where they're going. And that also tells us kind of where we need to get in front so we can start mitigating this stuff at the front end. To the assistant director's point at the beginning of the show is that this isn't just reactive counterintelligence anymore. And our investigations, while a vast majority of them happen after the fact, if something is stolen, there's a very robust effort that happens on the front end to prevent this from happening in the first place, right? And so these relationships that we have with these major aeronautical corporations or heavy industry that makes big ships and what have you, those things are valuable to us because at the end of the day, it's getting in front, mitigating that on the front end protects us on the back end, mm-hmm. right?
I saw something on your website which I thought was like, rinky-dink but brilliant espionage, how to educate, manufacturers who might have visitors come into their manufacturing plant.
Oh, that was fascinating.
The double tape
the
on their
double
shoes.
Tape.
Tape on their shoes.
I wanted to know how you knew about the double tape on the shoes.
The double tape on their shoes so they collect little splinters of metals and then they take it back and mm-hmm. analyze, exactly.
The alloy.
Yeah, the ratio uh-huh. of metal mm-hmm. components.
That stuck with me.
Me yep. too. I mean, it's so rudimentary, and look at the competitive advantage they would get. I mean, mm-hmm. that's amazing, mm-hmm. right?
Right. So you got to know who's
so
coming.
So I'm telling you, if I'm corporate America, and I know about this partnership, I'm like, oh yeah, come on in. Tell me all these little stupid mm-hmm. things that I need to know, because that little thing, could you imagine now? Before you walk into the plant floor, it's everybody's looking at the bottom of your shoe.
Oh, I know. You're worried about the iPhones, but they've got tape on the bottom of the shoe.
Right.
I know.
Yep.
Sorry about that. I interrupted you. It made me think about that.
No. You know, at its core is understanding what the threat looks like, right?
So right. And the threat is double-sided tape.
That's the action, right?
Or the people that dip their ties in the chemical. I was like, okay.
Yeah. So they can
that
see
was
what
clever
the compounds
too.
Are.
Yes.
Easy, simple stuff, right?
Yep.
Right. So the things that we want to get out and want to partner with the corporations are making sure that they recognize what the threat is. All right. So they're letting in the right people and keeping out the wrong people. All right. Identifying and attributing a value to their trade secrets. All right. Or their intellectual property, that which they seek to protect, and making sure that they have a definable plan and what their mitigation plan is for stopping other people from getting to that widget, that formula, that thing that makes them profitable, right? So they've got to take very specific steps in order to protect it. And so they've got to have a defense in depth, these corporations, right? To be able to say, hey, if something is ultimately stolen from us, we've got to be able to articulate how they attempted to defend it. And if it was egressed out of the company, that when we ultimately catch the bad guy, and we catch a lot of them.
You do, I know.
Yeah, it comes down to we can show to the jury or to whomever that these are the steps that were taken by the victim corporation. They tried that it is of independent monetary value, that it wasn't released to the individual or a foreign company or country for the betterment of their product or their economy. And then we can get the prosecution going so we can hold these bad actors accountable.
Mm-hmm. It reminded me when I was reading about that and, just even giving a tour of your plant mm-hmm. could inform an adversary of your economic output strength and mm-hmm. your productivity and how you arrange it. It reminded me, and then we're going to take a commercial break, how my husband's older brother is an engineer for Boeing, and they live in Seattle. And so we go there like once a year to visit. And when you come out of the airport, you then, Seattle Airport, to get to downtown Seattle, you pass Boeing Field, mm-hmm. right? I don't know if you've ever done that before, but it's really phenomenal, right? And every time we drive past it, I always say, like clockwork, I say, oh my God, wouldn't that be so great to get a tour? And he says, I'm not even allowed inside. And he's the brother. Mm-hmm. He's like, I'm not even allowed inside of Boeing. They won't even let family members in. And that's been like their policy. And, you know, when I last night was reading all this, that's what I thought of. It was like, that's what
Boeing's. Right, because you think of cybersecurity, but they're just walking in and using tape.
Right, physically on the ground. We don't even want you to know how we're set up.
Yep.
And of course, that's how you remain being Boeing. But for the little guys out there in corporate America, you know, they might learn the hard way. So what you do is really, you know, getting in front and educating, which is not traditionally the FBI's mission, I have to say is really, you know, it's a terrific thing you do for, you know, the average American who's running a company, trying to do something good for themselves or their employees or the workforce. And it made me think about, you know, like all these little things, like I would never know they're walking in with tape, and, you know, great work. Okay, so in the last segment of the show, what I'd like to do is talk about some of the cases that made the press releases. They're extremely interesting, and I think it'd be very helpful to listeners to know what's really going on out there, because actual specific cases, because it gets lost in sensationalized news. So we'll do that when we come back in the last segment of our show. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Make long-term care insurance part of your retirement plan. Long-term care is expensive, and it's not covered by traditional types of insurance plans. With benefits designed specifically for the federal family, the Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program offers a smart way to help protect savings and assets and remain independent should you need long-term care services someday. Start planning for the future. Take the next step and visit LTCFEDS.com today. That's LTCFEDS.com.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Deborah Roth. I'm hosting today's show. It's the Counterintelligence Division for the Federal Bureau of Investigation. And if you go on the FBI's website, which is FBI.gov, then you get to the Counterintelligence Division sort of inside page. And there you'll find all kinds of press releases regarding, and even in 2015, it's four separate either arrests or convictions with regard to an act of espionage. And it was, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, who knew so much of that was going on? But can I ask either one of you, for our listeners, if they think that they have something to report to the Counterintelligence Division, an act of potential economic espionage, or espionage with inside the U.S. government? How do they do that?
Yeah, so absolutely. The FBI.gov website is a place with a tremendous amount of information. A lot of what we talked about today about the Counterintelligence Division, but there's actual information on there about how to report. And then also, as I mentioned, all 56 field offices, there is a counterintelligence program in each one of those. And so they can contact any one of those field offices, and they will be forwarded to the appropriate individuals to be able to handle whatever they want to discuss. And so we'll follow up on it that way.
Okay, so they get started at the website, right?
Yeah, the website.
Start at the website. So what struck me when I was reading the news releases was that you had at least two convictions, maybe they were arrests, regarding scientists or former scientists who work in the national labs. So, Assistant Director Coleman, tell us what the national labs are.
Yeah, so the national labs...
We've lost track of that since the Cold War ended, right? And we're all focused on Sony Pictures and terrorists.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's still the ultimate sort of act of espionage, I think,
is our nuclear weapons, right? Right, absolutely. So critically important, and as I mentioned early on, the relationships that we have with the rest of the U.S. intelligence community and our partners is critical to our success. The Department of Energy is no different. We have a tremendous cadre of people that are dedicated to work every day with the Department of Energy. We also have agents located at all the national laboratories that work hand in hand with the counterintelligence components for the Department of Energy.
Explain to our listeners what happens at the national labs.
So many different scientific areas of responsibility from the Department of Energy, but absolutely probably first and foremost is the weapons development.
Nuclear weapons.
Yeah, nuclear weapon development is probably the prime effort of the National Laboratory. I think something that would be really good for the listeners to talk or at least hear about is a case that was recently adjudicated out in San Francisco, and it is probably the most significant economic espionage case in U.S. history. And it's in Sandy. You want to talk about it? It involves DuPont.
Right. Mm-hmm. So DuPont, the major chemical.
Yeah, and Julie and I are sitting here like, how come we never heard of it, right? Have you heard of it?
Well, I'm not sure.
So in 2014, three defendants were found guilty for providing technical data, and more importantly, the formula for a given compound for turning things white. So sheets.
No, I have not heard about this one.
Shirts,
you mean my OxyClean?
Paint, all of it.
Wow.
That which turns things white. It's that chemical.
I love OxyClean.
To include the double stuff in your Oreos comes from DuPont, all right? And this technology, more importantly, the chemical makeup and the process by which you develop this was stolen from them and provided to China, all right? Why the Chinese
I have to stop you right there. Okay. Why do they want to make things white? Why do they care so much?
We like the color white in Oreos.
They put that much effort into the color white?
Indeed. And think about industrial paints and think about paper and think of all the things that you use that are simple white, right?
Oh, wow.
It's a compound, it's a bleaching, it's a process that's very efficient that the Chinese had this by themselves, et cetera. But what they did was they stole the process that made it more efficient. And so they didn't have to capitalize on the development themselves. So they found it. They targeted a couple employees who had access to these trade secrets. And then they recruited these people. They paid them well. And they egressed these formulas and processes out of the company and over to China.
And when
was that?
It was back in 2011 when we first got the lead, and the prosecution was in 2014. And then there are several co-conspirators that are in the judicial process that still haven't been played out.
How does somebody figure that out? Like, how do they figure out that the crime occurred? Has that come to light?
A lot of times,
of a sudden the Chinese are like whitening things.
All of a sudden, they have a process, all right, and that gets informed back to the major company. So in this case, it was DuPont. DuPont made the referral to the FBI. Said, hey, listen, our stuff is out there, and we want to make the referral to the Bureau that the theft has occurred.
Mm-hmm. And Assistant Director Coleman said it was the largest economic espionage.
Yeah, economic espionage investigation that we've conducted to date.
Is that dollars? Are you talking dollars?
Yeah, it's dollars. And then when you look at the network, right, the network of individuals that were involved in this investigation and companies in China that were involved in the acquisition of this particular process, an incredible economic espionage investigation.
Mm-hmm. Over turning things white.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I listen, and it's all about this, right? We're all tuned into the cyber attacks to like hack and gain access to things. And so you sort of forget more about traditional manufacturing, the traditional manufacturing sector. But my question is, so you prosecute the people inside DuPont who sold it to the Foreign Intelligence Service. How does DuPont can't recover its...
No, it's gone.
Wow.
Right. And so that affects all of us, right? It affects shareholder value. It affects our TSP. It affects our retirements. All of that.
DuPont's publicly held corporation.
Exactly.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it's in everybody's benefit, all right? And it's everybody's responsibility. And remember, at its core, this is all personal responsibility and managing behavior. But if we want to be serious about this, we've got to get in front of these people to harden the target, as we discussed. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Get the word out.
You know,
that
just
people
initially,
are trying
it
to
sounded
steal this
silly,
stuff.
Right? Like, mm-hmm. You know, we want to learn how to, you know, make things as white as we can. And then when you hear, well, there's no, obviously, I mean, I guess I knew the answer to that. There's no way for DuPont to put the genie back in the bottle. And so that has a dramatic economic effect on a very large publicly held U.S. company.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I come back to not in my wheelhouse that FBI does that kind of work.
Right.
It's just not mm-hmm. in my wheelhouse. So if it's not in my wheelhouse, my guess is it's not in a lot of other people's wheelhouse. We have a few minutes left in the show, and I do know from the information that was sent to us, Assistant Director Coleman, from your office, that critical infrastructure is also in your mission area.
Yeah.
And so when we hear critical infrastructure, we know you're talking about like power plants and water treatment plants. Tell us what the work of your division is in
yeah,
that
so that's a great – so this is becoming an emerging issue for
yeah,
us.
Yeah, I read it, and I was like, okay, now I'm really drinking bottled water.
Yeah, so it is. It's a grave concern. We are taking steps to address that from an investigative perspective, and again, trying to be as proactive and predictive as possible. So I'll let John, my chief of staff, talk about what we're doing in order to address this and work with the different corporations.
John, thank you.
No problem, Deborah. So what we're seeing is we talked about the two threats before, the symmetric threat and the asymmetric threat, which have a rather direct linkage to foreign intelligence services. But one of the other things, kind of an evolving emerging threat we're seeing, is that through legitimate commercial activity with companies that have ties back to governments or to countries that have foreign policies that are hostile to the United States, right, is that these companies again, maybe benign, at least their activity here in the U.S. is benign. It's just commercial activity. But if you peel back some of the layers on what that access gives, through normal commercial activity, and you peel back the layers and find the ties that are going back into China and Russia, what you start seeing is that this is a whole different avenue in which to acquire U.S. classified, U.S. proprietary information in a manner that isn't traditional. There's not a spy on the ground. There's not someone here that's been tasked. It's a salesman going out and getting a contract to manage an enterprise IT network. Legitimate business. There's nothing illegal about it. But if you start peeling back how that data is handled, no matter what's written in the contract, if you start peeling that back, you start seeing that, wow, the network operation for your company, for your clear defense contractor, for this program, wow, that's being managed back in China, or the data center is back, back in Russia, or the code written for that is somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So when you start looking back at these threads, and this is something that the FBI has not historically been doing, is to better define that threat. Because if I'm a company and have to make a business decision, do I enter a contract with someone that's going to provide me a good or a service that's part of a critical enterprise, transportation, energy? I need to know risk is threat, vulnerability, and consequence. But the FBI's job is to try to define that threat better for these companies.
And I regret that we waited to the very end of the show to talk about the infrastructure threat. So that's a great reason to bring you all back. But we, because, it's frightening for people like me who actually run a business. So I do appreciate getting a little taste of that at the very end. And I am hoping that everyone will come back and join us sometime in 2016. Godspeed to the work that you all do in the FBI Counterintelligence Division. And if you ever want to do any more promoting through our Fed Talk, please feel free to reach out to me. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Meeting.